Hey guys, and welcome to Smart Women Read Romance, a book review podcast where we fangirl over all things romance. I'm Juliet.
And I'm Jessen.
Today we'll be reviewing Devil in Disguise, the seventh book in Lisa Kleypas' Ravenel series. Before we dive in, make sure that you subscribe to the podcast on your preferred podcast platform and please rate and review us. If you want more romance discussions, follow us on our social media pages at SWReadRom, join our Facebook group, The Swoon Zone, and follow Jessen on her YouTube channel, Jessen Reads Romance. If you'd like some podcast extras, become a patron of the podcast on Patreon, where we have extra content, including exclusive episodes, and give away free enamel pens, stickers, books, and bookmarks. And, of course, a special shout-out to our patrons for all of your support. We love you guys, as always.
Love you guys.
Yes. Okay.
Oh, my gosh. So, today, the day that we are recording this beautiful podcast.
Y'all don't even know.
A beautiful piece of art came out.
Y'all.
Juliet has shared her art for Witches Get Stitches that the wonderful Jamila has created.
Jamila Mejio is a genius.
Ridiculous.
Genius. Genius.
So please tell me. Tell me how this came about, because I love to hear about Jamila's process. And she reads the books and she pulls from like scenes and stuff, and that inspires her.
Yeah.
But the detail,
it's insane. So yeah, so first of all, when I did this for the first book, I was like, well, why don't you just read the book, and if anything sparks your interest, a scene, you do whatever. She's like, okay. So then like she did a mock-up and I'm like, that's gorgeous, let's do it, you know.
Perfect.
And then so we did the same for Don't Hex and Drive, and then this one as well. This was the first mock-up she sent me, and I was floored the way she implements the magical aspect of the book. With this one, of course, is the tarot cards, the divine seer aspect, which blows me away. She recreated these tarot cards. She actually sent me two mock-ups. One was of like a black and white sketch of just Nico and Violet and her giving him the tattoo.
The pose. Can we talk about the pose for a second? Because he's laying down and Violet's tattooing and infusing the tattoo, but he has his hand on her hip, and it just it sends me. Every time I see it, I'm just like, that little touch.
I know. It's like the Swoony Moments minisode we did. Like when like these little subtle, like his hands there, and y'all, and the way he's looking at her, just like the way he's looking at her, I'm like, oh my god, stop.
It gives me life. And yeah, the tarot card details that she includes is beautiful, and it feels so magical. Like she creates that sense of magic in every single couple illustration that she does, and it's just freaking fantastic. And,
it's funny because she chose the tarot cards that are mentioned in the book, that are in the readings. And of course, Nico's holding the lover's card, which I love that he's holding the lover's card.
Yes.
But she also wanted...
We're going to be lovers.
I know, like, hey, just letting you know, this is coming down the road.
It's perfect.
But she's like, well, I have, you know, an extra spot for one more card that you want, any kind of like little Easter egg or something that would be like a hint for readers or whatever. And I was like, okay. So I started looking up and I was like, oh my gosh. The Fool card, because the Fool card is about basically taking a leap of faith and trusting the universe, and this is what Violet needs to be doing, and she is kind of the fool in the beginning, on purpose, and, you know, and she does. She eventually takes that leap and, like, never looks back, and what's really cool is that the Fool card is typically a boy with a dog behind him, like, but this time she did a girl and the wolf on the Fool card.
It's
beautiful.
Perfection.
She has a hidden wolf in there too somewhere.
Oh my god. See, there I only like briefly was able to like look at it because today has been so freaking busy. But like immediately when I opened up Instagram, that was one of the first things that I was like, oh my god, it's amazing. But I'm going to have to go look for the hidden wolf.
There's a hidden wolf, and I haven't mentioned it to anybody. I'm just curious to see if anybody finds it.
Ooh, I'm going to find it, obviously, after we record this episode. One more thing I do want to shout out, another bit of merch. Oh, Juliet will eventually have this
as a print. Yes, I'll have all three prints and in two different sizes, because someone requested the postcard size, which is a little bit smaller. So I'm going to have two different sizes on my website by September. I promise you, no later than September, it's going to be up.
Sounds perfect. But I do want to shout out, if you're not following Jen from the Book Refuge, you totally should, because she is coming out with some merch, some really cool t-shirt designs. They have a historical book club called the Rake Appreciation Society. They will also be reviewing Devil in Disguise, actually. Ooh. And it's going to be up on either Crystal or Jen's channel on YouTube. But they are fantastic, and I love Jen's t-shirt creations. And she recently did a Taken by Dark Mafia t-shirt that I absolutely need to have. So I love bookish merch, and I love to shout out some bookish merch. So I just thought you guys would want to know.
That's awesome.
Well, let's talk about this book. First of all, we're huge Lisa Kleypas fans. I think she might be the most featured author on our podcast at this point.
I think so.
We have done so many episodes.
Her or Nalini. We're not sure.
Yeah, her, because we tend to, once they have a new release, to put them on the podcast. It's always it's always like that. But the Ravenel series is, I think, her most popular series. The fact that it was going to continue after she exhausted the Ravenel children was kind of like, everyone was like, what's going on?
I know, we were like, what's happening? How is this a Ravenel series? Like,
why is it in the Ravenel? Honestly, I really still don't know why it is in the Ravenel series, and it's not like a spinoff, but as long as we still get more books with the Wallflower children within the series, I'm okay with it.
Yes.
I don't care.
Yes. Yes, we don't care. This book, I just, every time I read Lisa Kleypas, I'm like, well, she can't top that. That's just amazing. She can't top this one. There's no way.
We underestimate her every
time. And then she writes Devil in Disguise. And I'm just going to say, I'm going to try to be articulate in this episode, but I have never swooned so much over a hero. I have never, I've highlighted practically the entire damn book. And I just can't get over it. And I feel like, so there's one word I have to describe this book. And I'm going to see if you feel this. I felt this like literally from the moment they're in the typewriter room till the end of the book. And it's that tenderness.
There's
like tenderness in everything. And it floors me how she does it with just, she is a witch with her words. Okay.
It's beautiful. And I was speaking to Jen and Crystal because Devil in Disguise was appearing in Barnes & Noble up to 2 weeks in advance of the release day. Unfortunately, the paperback version did not appear in my Barnes & Noble early. I even asked, and they were like, doesn't release.
Up,
I'm like, excuse me, are you a stickler for the rules, sir? Could you not just once?
Can you not break the rules like the other Barnes & Noble for me? Please.
At least I did get to read it, but I was really glad to be able to speak with Jen and Crystal about it and gush over it before we even started our reread.
Yeah.
And I was like, it truly feels like Lisa Kleypas was courting me throughout the entire novel.
Yeah.
Like, she wrote these characters specifically to just like bowl me over with all the feels. It really did feel, and Jen said, it felt like a love letter to her readers. And I was like, it really freaking did. Because it was just a perfect story, the perfect characters, because not only is Kier a swoony hero, but Merit, my God. I mean, she, is my perfect historical heroine. And I'll talk more about that in the spoiler section. I guess we should go over the characters real quick.
Well, let's also mention, I think another reason this one is so special is because we have that first generation, Sebastian St. Vincent and Westcliff and all those people that you and I have loved earlier. It's like the love is like being bridged, you know? It's just like this culmination of our feelings for this whole family and the characters and everything, and it's just...
It's true, stunning. And I really do like how Lisa Kleypas continually interconnects her series, not super blatantly. Like, you could get away with completely reading the Ravenel series without reading the Wallflowers or the Hathaways, but it's kind of better when you read all of them because there's these characters that crop up and kind of series hop, and it's really nice and fun, and she does a really great job about it. You wouldn't feel like you're missing out, per se, but yeah, it's just, this one is definitely the one where it's just like you get greater enjoyment after reading the Wallflower series and then reading this one.
It's
just a fact. So let's talk about the characters really quickly before we jump into the spoiler section, because I just have a feeling that the spoiler section is going to be ridiculous with the quotes that we want to highlight. It is. Okay, so this is the characters. Merit is our heroine, and she is a widow, and she is the oldest daughter of Lillian and Westcliff. I freaking love Merit so much the way that she handles her business, because her husband owned a shipping company, and when he died at sea, they were only married for about a year and a half, she completely picked up the reins, and she has killed it.
Yeah.
And she doesn't want to be running this, like, all the time. It's very, you know, time-consuming. And so she is helping her youngest brother, Luke, who's the third son of an earl. He really doesn't have too many, like, prospects, and she's training him.
Yeah.
But she's so good at anticipating people's needs and making them comfortable, and she can manipulate a situation in her favor without being blatantly, like, aggressive or, like, showing her hand, like, I am woman, hear me roar. Yeah. She is just one of my favorite heroines in historical romance of all time, and I absolutely love her.
I love how Luke tells her at one point at the very beginning, it's like, yeah, you like them big and mean, so you can take care of them.
It's true.
And she does. She just, like, takes control and, well, let's just calm down.
It's kind of like a challenge. It's kind of like a challenge. It's like, you like them big and mean because they underestimate you.
Right.
And then when they get near you and you handle them like they're little two-year-olds, it's just satisfying. And it really was. And that's what happens with Keir, because he is importing his Scotch whiskey from Isla, and it is very expensive whiskey, and there was a problem with unloading it into the cargo hold, and he is so mad about it, and Merritt has to smooth things over. And the scene, which I want to dissect in the spoiler section, where she just handles this big, gruff Scotsman who is like, you know, this is his business. This is his livelihood. And he's had a lot of money. And it's very personal for him as well, because he, his father passed away, I think,
like 5 years ago.
Yeah, about 5 years ago. And some of this whiskey was like special batches for him and like named it after him. Yeah. So it's just like, it's not even just whiskey, it's like a family tradition,
a family heirloom.
Oh god, you know? It's just, it's beautiful, it's fucking beautiful. But the chemistry, guys, from the moment that they're in the same room together, it does not abate. It is constant, and it is beautiful. And oh my god, you just have to read
spoiler
the damn
section,
book.
Guys. We have to go to the spoiler section. All right, guys, we're heading to the spoiler section. So if you haven't read Devil in Disguise, what are you doing with your life? Go read it. And then come check it out and come back and chat with us.
All right, guys.
Ugh.
Spoiler section.
All right. Do you want to start from that opening scene when he comes in all blustering and screaming Scottish?
Absolutely. He is just like, who is in charge? Where can I find the person to take care? Because he is like soaked in whiskey. They have dropped, they have mishandled his barrels of whiskey, and half of his shipment's not even there because his ship got turned around because there was no open like port for him to actually like park it in there so that they can unload. So he is just rip roaring mad. And what does Merritt do? She smooths it all over. It is absolutely fantastic. First of all, disarming by saying, like, I'm the one in charge.
Yes.
Me, and then, a woman.
And then he remembers her husband, and he had a great respect for her husband.
Yes.
And so he kind of, like, calms down a bit. He's like, oh, I'm sorry for your loss, and sort of, like, and then she's like, okay, this is what we're going to do, this and this and this, and he's like, well, I don't know about all that, and she's like, well, let's go. I love this part where she's like, let's go get you changed. We'll get you back to the dock.
Yeah, and
we'll
get all this then stuff. We'll speak to the harbor master and get an extension. I'll take care of all of it. But like you're gonna feel so much better once you're not all wet with whiskey.
I know.
And he's like, wait
a second.
You can't come with me alone. You have to be chaperoned. And like her brother Luke is standing right there. And like Merritt is the oldest of six children. Okay, and she's like, oh no, I'm a widow. I chaperone other people.
Yeah,
I don't get chaperoned.
He's looking, he's like, aren't you gonna do anything about this? He's like, she's my older sister. I can't do anything about that.
You think that?
But then this is how she handles him. I love how she goes, but everyone knows that Scotsmen are the most honorable men there are. And, he goes, and then suddenly he puffs up and he's like, yes, you're right. We are the most honorable
of
men.
We have an uncommon amount of honor running through our veins. She's like, so of course I would be no way in danger of you compromising me because you are, in fact, the most honorable of men.
She's like, then I feel perfectly safe. Let's go. And then toddles
and then
off.
And then he goes, wait, what?
What just happened? I just got handled.
Handled like a freaking pro.
Oh, it was so good.
Merritt. And this is what I'm talking about when it comes to historical romance. Some of the newer historical romances don't resonate with me because I like the message that historicals are trying to incorporate with, you know, women empowerment and stuff like that. But sometimes it could feel like it's almost like a modern day woman being thrust into historical with right. too many commonalities with modern phrases or whatever. And it just yeah. takes me out of the story. I think that Lisa Kleypas does this so well because I feel like every single one of her heroines, no matter what type of personality, no matter what their ambition, like Pandora,
right.
she aspired to be a game maker. She wanted to make games, and that was like so unusual. But I mean, in being a woman during this time, you are limited by what you can accomplish. But right. I feel like Lisa Kleypas finds realistic workarounds to what a woman can accomplish, and that's what merit does.
And
she doesn't try to like
respects women how he would treat her and things he would say.
And she doesn't try to dick measure with men because she knows that that's not going to get her anywhere.
Right.
And she uses what she has in her arsenal to her advantage, and she ends up by coming out on freaking top every time. And like that's what I like to see. I don't need a hammer when, you know, a little chisel could be used instead. Yeah, use the proper tools to convey.
She uses that, you know, more honey, you know, to us.
Honey to rather than vinegar. Deal.
Yes.
And so very different from her mother. Her mother's a little bit more, like, aggressive, well, like
she, and
Lillian.
She's American, so I kind of expect that. You know, because the Americans were known for being very brazen and outlandish and a little bit, what do you call that?
Uncouth?
Yes. Uncouth. That's it.
So we get to the apartment.
We get to the parlor. No, wait, let's go to the parlor first.
Okay.
We have to go to the typewriter.
Oh, my God.
This is very, very
Oh, my God.
Important.
I almost skipped over one of my favorite things ever.
I know. So first of all, when they get to the parlor, she asks him if he wants
tea.
She
knows he's famished.
He's like,
he hasn't eaten in like days.
Yes, like he's been on the sea, you know? Like they've had like crap on the ship. So she goes and gets like
I love how he says, like, he's never had someone take care of him
He's
this.
Never had a woman pour coffee for him.
Because he downed it, and it feels so warming inside. The way that it is described, it is the most intimate thing ever. And she refills it before he's, like, kind of ashamed that he gulped it down.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, my manners. Like, I'm an ill-bred
and
Scotsman.
And she didn't even ask. She just poured him another cup.
Because she pays attention like
yes.
that.
Yes. By the way, also it was coffee, not tea, and I should say that lovers of coffee, like I totally was like, yes, cream, sugar, this is like delightful, thank you. Oh my God, so there's this moment, and he's, the whole time, he's looking at her and just detailing how beautiful she is, what a lucky man would ever be to get her for a wife.
I loved how he starts noticing her round bottom, and then he's like, oh my God, I have a boner, we need to push it down.
He's like, what kind of honorable Scotsman am I?
Yeah, if she would know the thoughts I had in my head,
it's so adorable.
She would not trust me. And then, so he finally like starts walking around the room while she's talking to her secretary.
Yeah.
So that he can be distracted.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. And he comes upon the typewriter and is like, what is – I've seen this, but how does it work?
This
like,
is brilliant,
demonstrate,
by the way. This fucking moment is genius. This is where Lisa Kleypas is so amazing.
So effective.
I can't even – and I want to say something about it, too. So, of course, he doesn't want to, you know, break it with his brutish hands. So
he's like, I'm a huge Scotsman.
It will absolutely break. She goes, well, I'll type something. I'll type your name. So she types his name. And he goes – we'll type your name now. And one thing I want you to notice is that in the book, I noticed this, there's no space between their names.
I know!
I'm just like, it could have been an accident, but it is not.
It's too much.
It is not. Every time we see this slip of paper pop up again, their names are connected. And I'm just like, but this is how it is. They are connecting immediately from this moment.
What a freaking metaphor. I'm just saying.
Oh,
like,
my God.
I mean, Lisa Kleypas. I literally swooned, and I'm like, are we in the second chapter?
Where are we? They just fucking met 2 seconds ago.
And I'm already shipping these characters so hard.
Yes.
How does this happen, Lisa Kleypas? I don't even know. I'm like, these two
mad
people are
genius.
Perfect together.
Yes.
And they haven't even done anything.
And here's the thing. When she turns to tend to the secretary, he folds up the piece of paper and he slips it in his pocket.
She had thrown it away.
Yes.
And he fished it out
like,
of the basket
and folded it and kept it in his wallet.
Oh, my God.
Y'all. End of story.
Bam.
No, I'm kidding. We have more.
So we go to the flat. And she is remarking on how Spartan it is. Like, I'm so sorry. And he's just like, look, I got like stone floors in my hut.
Floor back on the island. We're good.
And she's like, oh no, I was being tactless.
Yeah.
But anyway, she like basically is like forcing him to bathe. And again, she handles him very, very well. And she wants to fill up the pail herself.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, that has to be primed.
You have to prime that. And she's like, oh,
no.
She's like,
no, it's fine.
I got this.
No, water sprays everywhere. And he gets absolutely wet. In this moment,
oh my god,
Kier like approaches her and she
and crowds her by the counter.
This is one of my favorite things for heroes to do.
Yes,
is to not touch but corral, encompass with the body,
cage them in. Yes,
like with the hands on either side. Yes, on a table.
Was this one our minisode?
I don't know.
Swoony moments. Because it's one of my favorite things too.
It's fucking perfect.
Oh my god! And so he
and
does,
like, and he calls her a wee bully.
You wee bully. At first, she thinks he's coming to like. He's being mad. Awfully aggressive, and she's like, oh my god, he's angry, and he's smiling and laughing, goes, you wee bully, I guess you'll get your way. And I was just like, oh my god.
He's smitten, absolutely smitten, and her heart is pounding now, and now she's noticing, oh my god, I am attracted to this big burly Scotsman, and what is this? I can see his reflection in the window as changing.
Oh, by the way, and he's got a nice package.
Oh my god. It's wonderful. And when he comes back out, she actually lets it slip. And I normally don't like this, but this is how it's done. If you're going to have somebody who says, oh my goodness, did I say that out loud? It happens once. I don't want it to be a character trait that they constantly let
talking out loud.
No,
right.
That's wrong.
Oh, it works.
This is right. Because he asks if like, is there anything else like I can do for you or whatever?
Yeah. What will you do with me now, you little wee bully?
Yeah. What would you have me do now? And she says, kiss me. And like he freezes and he just like, absolutely.
Oh my god. Yes. Y'all.
And the thing is the passion, and he has to literally pry himself away from her. And she tries to pull him back. And I think that this is what's so glorious about it, because Merritt is just like, I've been, you know, alone for a while and I didn't even realize that I missed this intimacy, and now she's craving it. But he is just, he doesn't want to compromise her because he knows that he's going home. He's going to be away in Scotland. There's no way this would ever be able to work.
And so he's fighting against it. Not me. You know, I'm a man, you know.
The way that he's so concerned about how others would view her. Like, your reputation could be ruined. Like, I respect you so much. I don't want that for you. I don't want anybody to have anything bad to say about you. And it's just, oh my god, again. Swoony. He's fucking swoony.
So they're like, okay, let's just go about our business, right? We're just going to pretend that didn't happen. Ha, ha, ha. Okay. And I love how, you know, he's like, I don't have time for food. I'm not going to go sit in a public house. She's like, oh, well, come this way. There are street vendors and I can help you find someone. So, of course, she's like still bullying him, but he's like smiling the whole time. Like,
he's having so much fun. Yes. And he didn't even really want to come to London. Like, this isn't his scene.
No,
like, not at all. And he wants to kind of go home to his island and make his whiskey and not rub shoulders with, you know, people that he needs to sell to and everything. So anyway, she finally delivers him to the warehouse where he's going to be helping her brother supervise unloading the whiskey and making sure that they have enough time. And
goodbye.
she's going to go talk to the harbor master, whatever, and smooth that all over. Well, she's thinking about him like the whole
day. She cannot even stop. She's like, and the other thing is she's like, I've been alone for a while now and I haven't even thought about myself as far as like what I want. Everything she's doing is for the business, for the family, for the, you know, whatever. It's like, this is something that I want, you know? And so she's like,
so she makes an excuse to go back to the warehouse.
Yes,
and like, I love how her brother calls her out on it.
Like, oh yeah. It's like,
let's not pretend you came to tell me this message that you absolutely could have told me tomorrow.
You could have sent a note or something.
Yeah.
Like what are you doing?
And he cautions her. He's like, sis, he's like, This is going to be the ruination of you.
Yeah.
Like, I see you going headlong into this bad situation. And she just kind of doesn't care.
Yeah, she literally could care less what he says.
She almost gets smashed by a loose barrel of whiskey. And who's there to save her?
Oh, of course. Yes.
He is right on hand to snatch her up against his body. And oh my god. And I kind of feel like Luke was just looking at this as, I guess this is inevitable. I might as well give them time alone.
Well, and I thought he also was like, we need to get them out of this room, because basically he was not letting her
like
grow.
Like in public, yeah.
He was still holding on to her. He's like clutching her to his body, and they're having this like conversation inches from each other's face, and like basically, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. It's okay. I took care. You know, like
and I Luke will is like you. Everyone and Luke's can like, observe this.
Why don't you walk her down? You know,
I to think the carriage.
Yeah, I think Luke knows that, but he's also like, I need to not see it. Let all these eyes watch this unfold, because they're about to like fucking make out right here. You know, like.
And
to go downstairs.
I love how she is adamant about, like, this cannot be the last time that I see him. Like, yeah. What is your schedule? Maybe we'll see you then, whatever. And she invites him to dinner.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to rub shoulders with anybody. He's like, I'm not in the mood to, like, meet a lot of people. It'll just be us.
Yeah, it'll just be us. Just
and he says, that's not a good idea.
He's like, you know I can't do that, Merritt. And like, oh! When he starts talking about...
He knows where this is going to go if they're alone together. And she is insistent, though. I love how she just kind of ignores him and just says, like, I'll see you at 8 o'clock.
I know. After they have another kiss, like, she's going through why all the reasons they should. She's like, I haven't felt this way, whatever. And so he kisses her again. And then he's like, I'm not going to come. And she just said, don't forget the whiskey. Just see you there at 8. You know, like she's like, I expect you at my house. So it's really awesome. So then we have... So the next day... So after... Oh, my gosh. So the next day, he has a couple of meetings with different places because he's trying to get his whiskey in different shops and different places that sell in London.
And they talked about all the clubs.
One of his like liaisons who's sort of like helping him, this is like, the one place you should go is Jenner's. It's the most well-respected. It's like, it is the most. So we're like, Jenner's? Like, I get excited immediately knowing Sebastian St. Vincent is the proprietor of Jenner's. So he goes there and he's having his whiskey, and he's like, he had already been told the Duke would not show up, and he's like, good, because I don't want to talk to these, you know, posh people. Like, I don't, you know, that's not my people. And so he's sitting there having whiskey and talking about the business with the guy, and the Duke's here. The Duke arrives. He comes in. He looks at Keir and freezes. At this point, I've figured it out. I'm sure you had too.
Yes.
Like, there's been a couple of
descriptions.
I knew
it. The way that Sebastian reacted to him was all the confirmation that I needed.
Oh, yeah. Same for me.
You know?
And we've already got descriptions that they have the same color blue eyes, and he's like this golden lion.
Right. And this is the first time that they're side by side together, and it's very obvious. And even, like, the, I forgot what the guy, I was just, the manager of Jenner's, was kind of looking between them, like, what? What's happening?
What's like, going on?
They look kind of alike. And it is of note, Keir looks like a burly Scotsman with a huge beard.
I love the reason he doesn't get his beard shaved, because the guys make fun of him because he's so pretty. And he doesn't like being teased by the men, you know?
And I love how before Sebastian shows up, the manager's kind of just like, oh, his grace is the most wonderful and la la la. And like, Keir's probably like, he's probably like this old, you know, pot belly, whatever. And then Sebastian comes in. Oh,
like a
he's
cat.
So fucking sexy. Oh. He's still got it,
yes,
baby.
Yes, he does.
And his reaction, because at first he was just like, oh, it's too early in the day for me to have whiskey. Oh my God.
Then he looks at Keir. And he's like, and where are your family
Hello,
from?
Hello, doppelganger.
And, I know, and where is your family from? And, you know, he just asks all these questions. And I love, there's this moment, I highlighted everything, and I'm not going to read this back to you, but I'm going to tell you that moment where when he's saying goodbye to him, he turns and tears up.
He gets choked up.
And the guy says, the whiskey must be finally hitting him now. Like, it's what he's thinking. It's like, oh, the whiskey got to him.
Because he was about to say, like, it's very good to meet you and stuff.
Up,
but
he's
That's his fucking son.
That's his son.
Now, this was something that I suspected when the title was announced, Devil in Disguise, because if you read the Ravenel series, then and if
Anything
you read
The
Wallflowers,
Devil
in Winter is Sebastian's book.
Yes.
And Devil in Spring is Gabriel, his son's.
Yes.
Then we have Devil's Daughter, which is his daughter, Phoebe. And Devil in Disguise, I mean, like, come on. So it was kind of, I was just like, but why is it? The thing that was throwing me off so much was the Ravenel title. I was like, why is it in the Ravenels, though?
Yeah.
So it was throwing me off. I was like, maybe it is Sebastian's. I don't know. Long lost half brother. I don't know. Something.
Yeah.
But no, it's his freaking son. But the way that this actually plays out, so I'm going to kind of go, like, out of the order, the reading order. But I like how we find out that he has been aware that he's had a son for the past year, and he's actually been searching for him. And the fact that Evie knows. And so it's not a situation where he just now discovered, oh, this guy looks really, you know, alike. He looks exactly like I did whenever I was young.
Yeah.
And now Evie has to have the news, oh no, my husband has an illegitimate son. No, it's already done. Like, they all know. Evie knows. She's very supportive, and she can't wait to meet his son.
It's like, for to her, it's one more person to love.
To love. Oh, I absolutely love Evie. All of it. I think that it was very well handled.
It was.
And it was so perfect. And there is a line later on that Evie, when Evie, Lillian, Marcus, and Sebastian are all in the same room, and he's finally coming clean, because Lillian was the only one that didn't truly know. And I really love this line, how Lillian said it could have been Marcus.
Yeah.
And I feel like some people I saw before the book was released, they were a little bit upset about the possibility that Sebastian could have an illegitimate son. And nobody wanted Evie's feelings to get hurt. And I totally understand. Like, they're one of my favorite couples. But truly, like, the way that it was explained in the book, I'd be surprised if anybody would be upset about how it plays out. But if you would be, I think that it's important to remember, realistically, all of the heroes in historical romance are such man whores before they settle down.
They are.
It's highly unlikely that they don't have illegitimate children that they don't know about.
This is before the age of condoms. You know, they did have French letters, but
it's not in practice, exactly.
How many actually use them, you know? I mean,
exactly. So I was just like, it really could have happened to anybody. And I just, I loved how Sebastian just stepped up to the plate, that he was just like, I need to find my son. I need to give him everything. I need to love him. I need to smother him with love. And I thought that was perfect.
And I also love the fact that he was grateful that Lachlan was a good father. Like, it was like his greatest relief to find out that he had a good life.
He loved that.
Oh, God, it's so good.
He's just so proud of Kier, and I just love it.
I know.
So anyway, fast forward to Kier being almost mugged.
He goes to dinner. Yeah. He also did get his hair trimmed for her.
Oh, he did. Was sweet. He wanted to get a little prettier.
But kept his beard, of course, just trimmed. And yeah, so he gets attacked by what he thinks is a thief, stabs him in the back, and then tries to stab him in the front, but he's carrying that flask of whiskey that he was going to share with her tonight. So he gets to her house. She's, of course, thinking she's been stood up because he's like 30 minutes late. And he's basically dripping blood on the doorstep. He's like, I'm not coming in. I'm just letting you know. I'm so sorry. I'm late and I can't come, because she's like,
something came up?
No, inside, now.
Like, there's absolutely no
this
way.
This wee bully is not going to let him just go on home, because he's like, it's just a scratch. Yeah, he's been stabbed, okay?
Yes, and she is so upset. Like, she's upset that the idea that he is hurt.
Yeah.
That he could have died, because it was when Garrett Gibson was called to take care of Kier. Mm-hmm. We find out that it was going to be a kidney shot to sever that artery, and he could have bled internally and absolutely died.
Yeah.
And the amount of just like grief that she feels at the thought that Kier not being here anymore, and they've literally just met. It was well done, perfectly done. It was just beautiful.
I love the fight too over getting the shot for pain.
And the way that they convince
yes,
him.
Yes, again.
It's a through line that anything to do with Scotland is far superior to anything English. So it's Garrett so wants to poke him with the hypodermic needle to numb the situation numb the, so she can stitch stuff, okay?
Yes.
And he's like, refusing. Absolutely not. You're not getting that needle anywhere
like,
near me.
Like, no. No.
Garrett is absolutely wise. Oh, and she's like, well, you know, it was invented by the Scotsman. A Scotsman. And he's like, a Scotsman, you say?
Oh.
Well, I guess it's okay.
Okay, it's okay now. It's so funny. They share a look over him without him seeing. Yeah, okay.
Easy. So stubborn easy to man. Handle, man.
I know. Just tell him a Scotsman did it, and then we're good to go.
It was just perfect. It was a perfect little moment. Little moments like these absolutely make a book, like these tiny little things.
Garrett also takes the knife home with her, because he has the knife that they stabbed him with, and she recognizes it as a soldier's knife, and she's like, well, my husband's kind of an expert, you know. He worked as like an espionage for the queen and all this other stuff, the crown, and so he's like, fine, I don't need it, or whatever, and so off he goes. But Ethan, her husband, right now, is off doing some errand in Scotland for the Duke.
I wonder why. So Merritt kind of keys into that. Like, the only duke that we know that would have Ransom on call would be Kingston.
Yeah.
Sebastian. Yeah, and so, the pieces are falling in place.
Right.
And I love how Merritt's just like, well, let's have dinner. And it's a beautiful, intimate dinner where they talk about everything. They talk about their childhood. They talk about their likes and dislikes. Like, it's just, it's beautiful the way that it's told. Very, like, glossed over, but in a way that... You know that they're talking like they have known each other for years.
Right.
Like, that's just the amount of...
Kindred spirits.
Yes. They just click. They're the missing piece of the puzzle for each other.
And I think that's what like I said, you feel it literally from just the way she describes their connection. It reminded me a lot of how I feel when Kennedy Ryan introduces her characters, like in Grip or August and Iris. Like, there's just this immediate connection. And it only grows.
And it's like they almost can't bear to be away from each other. And like, that's why Merritt's pushing so hard for him to come.
Later, some of those lines, I swear to...
Yes.
Everything holy. What is this romantic
This is a religious experience, just letting you guys know.
Holy shit.
And Merritt basically says, like, I want you to spend the night. She's very much pushing for this. And
she said, I want you to give me the gift of you for a night. And he can't even, like...
He is so flattered that she would even consider him, this big brute of a man, like, being with him a gift.
Yeah.
And so he cannot resist her anymore. And they have the most beautiful night. He is so tender and loving and patient and sexy.
Sexy.
All night long, baby.
Holy shit.
Waking her up. And, like, I love how at first he tried to push her away by being crude and being like, if you want a fucking, we can get the bed rocking. Like, oh, yeah.
I'll fuck you.
And he's like, we'll get the bed rocking. Like, whatever.
And then I'll slap you with an ass.
I'll slap you on the arse in the morning without a backward look. And she's like, my bedroom's up there.
Yeah, my bedroom's the second door on the right. Let's go. Like, she calls his bluff and he's like, damn it. So, of course, he's like, insanely romantic. What I really love about him is that he takes over in the bedroom in such a swoony way. Like, she was so used to, like, because she gets really turned on and she's so used to, like, her husband when she would say, you know, now.
She
like,
was the dominant personality.
She was the dominant
in their
and he would just do
relationship.
He wanted her to do. And so, but in this, like, here's like, no. You little wee bully. I'm
going
to be in charge.
My wheelhouse. I will
I'm
be the
charge.
Director of this train.
I'm in
Thank
charge.
You very much.
It was. Awesome.
It was
so
freaking awesome.
What was really sweet was the next morning when he's putting his clothes back on and he's like already regretting, already missing her. He hasn't left the room and he's missing her.
And he
her.
Knows like this is going to be like the last
the
time that he sees her.
The most painful thing, and he looks over and he's staring at her and like the sunlight, the morning light, which is just like, ugh. The
I just want to let you know that I was literally crying from the moment that they started having sex till like now. Like I was literally, on my reread, I was literally just like, why is this so beautiful
crying? I
cried
so many times. And then, like, and then he notices that she's watching him, and he's so ready for her to just like gut him by saying "Don't leave" when he knows he has to leave. And she goes, "Where's my pat on the arse?" You know. And so he goes over and he like swoops and he kisses her bum, gives her a little pat, and then walks like Silas. It is so beautiful.
It's
We're both teary
so
eyed. This is ridiculous.
This is so sad, guys.
Oh,
we need a break.
God. Why don't we have alcohol tonight of all nights? So.
Now that Keir is going to the flat in the morning.
And all he's doing is thinking of her.
It's all about her. So he goes inside and he notices that they're, what?
Oh, well, right before he notices anything, he decides, he kind of paces the room and he looks at the empty bed and he's like, I can't be without her. I've got to go tell her. And so he's
like, just
rushing,
one more time. Just
one
more
time.
Time.
He's like, I can't, like, he physically, like, can't be separated from her. He's like, I've got to go. So he's rushing out to go see her. And then
he sees smoke coming under the door that leads to the warehouse. Because this is the thing. This flat is connected to the warehouse where they're unloading all the whiskey.
Yeah.
It's for this purpose, if somebody needs to stay there.
It's literally a bomb. If a fire breaks
waiting
out.
To go off.
Yes.
And the door handle has been removed.
Removed.
So someone is absolutely trying to kill Keir. Like, this doesn't just happen coincidentally.
Yeah.
And he knows he is fucked. And he says it. And he just like, I have to go back up and open the window. And he is three freaking stories up. And he knows that he could absolutely possibly die. But he's like, it's better than being boiled alive.
Yeah, he's like, I'd rather take my chances and jump and being broken, you know, on the way down.
There is a shed. If I could just reach it, it might break my fall enough that I won't die on impact.
Right. It's like 10 feet off the ground.
It is so tense. And I remember the first time that I read that, I was like, oh, What are you doing, Mr. Clavis? I was like, bring it back.
And then it cuts from there. We don't know what happens.
And then all of a sudden we hear a boom and we're with Merritt.
Yeah, Merritt hears this boom and she's like, what's going on? And Luke arrives. Sutton's like, I heard it. She goes, it's the warehouse. Yes. So they rush down there. And of course, you know, she is just beside herself because
she's crying because she knows that he could be dead
for him. Y'all, it's just insane how
she can't bear the thought of a world without Kira.
Oh, so sure enough, they see a man crumpled on the side. They go and see, and it is him, but he is alive. So she calls for Garrett. She says, he's coming to my house. And Luke's like, you can't.
This will ruin you. And she's like, I don't care.
He's coming to my house. Basically, like, he's mine.
I'm in charge of his care.
Shut up, Luke. And so sends for Garrett. And
Oh my God. Giving him oxygen. The fact that he was turning like blue.
Yes.
And the second that his color looked better and he was like grasping at the oxygen mask.
Oh.
And she almost like is just crying with relief that he's able to breathe again.
Yes.
And Garrett's like, he definitely has like broken ribs and his lung. He could have had like the blast could impact his lungs and his ability to be able to breathe in. His lung capacity isn't good right now. And hopefully we can, you know, help him to where he'll recover from it, but it's going to take a while.
Right.
And I love how she wants to be there. She wants to, you know, nurse him, but she's like, you need to go get some tea. Garrett's like, you need to go refresh yourself, you know, compose yourself. Like you've had a scare, a shock, you know, whatever. So she goes up to her room and she is just, like I said, the scenarios are running through her mind. She's like, I can't live in a world without him. She goes downstairs and she's like, can I come in? And she's like, you know, how are you doing? And Kira goes, looks at Garrett and says, who is she?
Oh my God. Y'all know.
I remember I didn't throw my Kindle, but I dropped it. I
shut mine. And I was like, what just
happened? He doesn't know her?
No.
After the beautiful things that they shared.
They had this beautiful, beautiful night and connection. He doesn't remember. I was like, how is Lisa Kleypas doing this to me? How? Oh, my God.
It was gutting.
Oh, my God.
But, like, I knew that it would be okay because Lisa Kleypas was writing it. Like, I trust her that much that I would just, like, this is how amnesia romance should be done. It was just so perfect. So she was just, like, very calm about it and being like, yes, you know, I am.
And she decides not to tell him.
Yeah, not like bring up like, yes, we just shared a night of beautiful passion.
Well, I love how even because she kind of is honest with Garrett. And it's like, you know, she's like, you're not going to tell him. He's like, no, he would think it's a trap. He's like, well, I don't know if it was Garrett or somebody, any man would be happy to be with you. And he's not like any man. He's, you know, he doesn't want to be like, you know, forced into this life or whatever. And, you know, because if you're a compromised woman, you're supposed to marry her, right? And so she's like, she's not going to do that. She's not going to do that to him, especially if he doesn't remember her.
And
the connection
is
gone. It's just devastating.
It is devastating. But so Merritt soon has a full house. Luke is there. And just being like, okay, now that he's better, we got to move him out of here. And she's like, absolutely not.
Then the Duke shows up.
And then Ethan Ransom shows up and being like, we need to investigate who. It's absolutely arson. I was talking to
the
fire chief.
Gasoline tank.
Yes. We got to figure out who's trying to kill him.
Yeah.
And then Kingston in the middle of the night fucking shows up. And he's talking to Ransom like they know something, and Merritt knows that. Merritt's like,
what's happening?
Yeah, something's going on. They have information that I don't have. And almost immediately, it's a way that the Duke smiles. And she's like, oh my God. And she knows now. Like, I love how the characters are absolutely not stupid.
Yeah.
And everything is handled with, like, the deftness and the care. And, like, he says, Merritt first wants to take Kira to Stony Cross because they're like, he needs to exit London so that he's away from the assassins.
He can recover at my family's home.
Exactly. And the Duke was just like, nope, he's coming to my house.
At Heron's Point.
At Heron's
he's coming
Point.
To mine. And then she goes like, well, I have to go with him. They're like, why? because we're engaged. I'm his fiance.
Yes.
Married.
And I love how Luke's trying to be like, no, you're not. When did you get engaged? And she's like, well, he spent the night all night with me. So like, we're 100% engaged. I'm totally compromised already.
Yes.
And I love how Luke's just like, well, like, we're not going to tell anybody. So technically you're not compromised. And Sebastian's like, you're missing the point, dear boy. She wants to be compromised.
You've missed it.
So they travel to Heron's Point, and she's with him on the train, and she's taking care of him. He has a fever because the stab wound is infected.
Right.
Okay, so it's not just his lungs. It's like everything.
Ooh, we have a little reminiscent with Sebastian when he had the fever, remember?
Yes.
He talks about how he hates fevers.
And
that was interesting.
I love that there's a point. He wears this necklace around. It is a key around a necklace that he wears. And Sebastian sees it, and he wants it so bad. And I love how Merritt protects that.
Yes.
She's like, no, not until he gives you permission to use it. And she looks at Sebastian. She's like, you know, you want to start off on the right foot with him. Like, I know your connection with him. You don't want to make him mad because you didn't ask permission to investigate this connection between you two. And I just love the way that Merritt is still a focal point for Keir, even though he doesn't remember her. Because once they get to Heron's Point, the doctor's there. Garrett recommended a good doctor in that area. They're trying to clean the wound, and he's thrashing about, and he wants her. Because
even
when Sebastian, Sebastian in the middle of the night is there, and I love how Sebastian, we're in Keir's point of view, and he's talking about like this angel that's been taking care of him. And then all of a sudden
he just knows her name,
she is amazing, and I want her, she makes everything better. And when he opens his eyes, he's like, ah, death has come at last. And it's Sebastian.
Death has come at last.
About fucking time of its suffering.
The devil is here.
The devil is fucking here.
My God, it's so funny. There was another time when they're when he's in invalid in the bed and all this stuff and thrashing about where they're, I can't remember. Oh, they're cleaning the wound and it's like really painful and stuff. And he calls for her and she sits by and he like puts his head in her lap. When she tries to get away, he like wraps his arms around her.
Yeah, once it's done, she's like, okay, I'm going to move off the bed because it's done. And he's just like a baby cradled in her lap, like, and just has his arm wrapped around her waist, and it's beautiful. But yeah, when Sebastian's there, he literally asks for her. He's like, not you, her. I want her. And she's and Sebastian's like, she needs to sleep, okay?
It's 3 a.m, son.
You've been raging with fever. And I love that there's still a connection. Like, that is a beautiful thing. I like that he wasn't trying to like push her away, being like, I don't know you, so stop trying to take care of me.
Right, he's
like, oh no, this woman wants to take care of me. I want her with me. She makes me feel better.
But that's just so interesting. It's like the connection's starting all over. Like they were meant to be. You know, it's like
it was never not going to be.
Right. They're innately drawn to each other regardless.
Come hell or high water, they will be together. And that is all that freaking matters.
Yeah.
And so once Keir starts getting better, it's really funny because like Merritt says, she is in charge of his care.
Yeah.
He is able to sit up and he wants breakfast, and what he's brought is not any breakfast that he is interested in. He doesn't want invalid food. He wants rashers of bacon. He's like,
and
I want a full
potatoes
Scots breakfast.
Beans and like a Scottish breakfast. You know, he's like, she's like, how can you put that on the plate? You have to pile it up.
The meat, like make a meat mountain and then put everything else on the side.
I love him. I love Keir so much.
He's so funny fun and beautiful. Okay.
Yeah, he does call her a wee bully at one point, and they both
freeze.
He
goes,
you remember?
I called you that before, didn't I?
Yes! So it's like he's getting these little slivers and little pieces, but at the same time, it's like he knows there was a connection, but he's also having these feelings of, we would never fit together. You know, I would, you know, she would not fit in my world. I would not fit in hers. I need to go home. He's also feeling out of sorts. He's lost his memory. He's been injured. His, you know, distillery is like in shambles. He's like, I need to get home, you know.
It's also interesting that before, because obviously spoilers, he gets his memory back. But before he gets his memory back, he makes a connection with Sebastian.
He does.
Because when Merritt is in the room with him, he's like, I look like him.
Yeah.
And she's like, You do. The resemblance is uncanny.
Especially because the Culpepper shapes
him. I love Sebastian totally told him to do it. And he acts like the valet did it on his own volition. But Sebastian is very much, he calls it the crumb catcher. Yeah. Sebastian does not like his son with a beard.
He does not like the beard at all.
He wants to be clean shaven. And I love how much he's so mad.
He's so furious. He calls him an old bald sack. The poor valet Culpepper is just an abuse.
It's just so amazing. Ugh. And I like how he is very unsure about how he feels about Sebastian being his real father, because his parents were so lovely to him.
Yeah.
Like, he was an orphan and they took him in, and they were like an older couple, and his father taught him everything he needed to know about making whiskey, and he was like the best father ever, and that loss is still with him, and so he definitely doesn't want this hoity-toity Duke to be replacing him. But Sebastian, the way that he just wants his son to open up to him is beautiful.
And he never forces it. He never like, he waits a long time to have a conversation with him. I love, so there's a moment between Merritt and Keir where Merritt says he would never try to replace your father. Like, he would never try to do that. You just need to speak with him. And they talk about guttling fish, and she's like, what is guttled? He's like you're trying to guttle me or whatever. It's like, it's when basically you go
and fishing with your hands.
You put your hand in the river with the trout, and basically the trout gets used to you, and you tickle them under the belly and under the chin so you can,
and before they know
them,
it, you snatch it up
and
you
dinner. Fry them. So he goes right after that, he goes to talk with Kingston, and the first thing Kingston does, they pour whiskey, and he goes, to your father, Lachlan. And he goes, I've been guttled.
Yes.
That's just like,
God,
it's so
of all
good.
The things that he could have said, like, yes. He's paying tribute to my father and not trying to move in and try to replace
yes.
him. So, like we said, Keir's getting better. And there's also a really beautiful moment because Sebastian says that it'll be okay if Phoebe goes to Heron's Point so that it'll be like respectable that Merritt's there. So Phoebe does show up there, and it is absolutely, this scene is so freaking touching.
Yes.
Phoebe knows that now she has a half brother, and she's shocked by it because she was unaware, but she takes it all in stride, you know?
Yeah.
And she has a talk with her dad. She comes with her newborn daughter, Eden, and Eden is thrashing and crying.
This scene.
And I love how Keir is absolutely not intimidated by a baby. And there's no better way to make my ovaries explode than by putting a man in the same room as a baby, and he's not afraid of it, especially a crying one. And Keir's like, let me have a turn at the baby. Starts freaking singing to the baby and calms her.
Yeah.
It is so freaking perfect. He's like, yeah, my friends have kids.
And well, Phoebe goes, he's amazing. She goes, I know. He's marvelous.
It's ridiculous.
Oh, my God. But then we get to the point where he's like, he's insistent on leaving. And she, because she had already told him that she pretended they were engaged so that she would be able to care for him and people wouldn't, you know, say things or whatever. And that, you know, she would break off the engagement. And so they've come to this point where they're going to say goodbye. And
yeah,
he's catching
Phoebe's coach to the train because she wants to go home.
Yes.
She's been there for a few days, but she's ready to go see her other children.
And so they have
Well, I might as well just take the carriage with you and hop on the train because it's time for me to go see about my business. You know, all my workers are probably like, what the hell's going
Kingston
on?
Kingston insists that he stop at Jenner's and take one of the porters as sort of a bodyguard with him, because Kingston is upset because he knows that they're
like,
out
you're going into danger. Somebody's trying to kill you, you know.
Yeah, somebody, we still haven't caught him, you know. And so he's like, you know, it's fine, you know, I live on a small island, people know, we'll see them coming, that kind of thing. So Kingston can't keep him, and then he goes to tell her goodbye, and she's like, she's very brave, and I'm just like, the whole time I'm just like dying inside.
Like, he's leaving.
What? Yes, he's leaving. And she's just like, puts on her brave face and's like, okay, well, I break off our engagement. It was great. But you could have tried to kiss me, you know, like laughing and whatever. And so it's this really sad goodbye. And he keeps waiting for her to like come watch the carriage leave, and she doesn't go. And so they're going down the road, she's with, and Phoebe's talking, and he's just like frustrated and aggravated, and Kingston had given him a wad of money in his wallet.
He stuffed his wallet with money.
Stuffed his wallet with money. And
I love how he's also trying to figure out how to get rid of it. He's like, yes, I can give, like, some to the coachman. I can give some to the coachman
and the driver. I can give some money to them. Like, he's very uncomfortable with all this cash.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like stuff. And so he's
then, trying to finagle it to where it's not as uncomfortable as sitting in his pocket.
Yes, and what should fall out but a little square piece of paper. And he picks it up and opens it up and sees their names typed. And immediately, it's like the trigger.
It all rushes fucking back.
All of his memories come back. And I love it. He's just like,
oh, stop the carriage.
Oh, my God, Mary. And just like banging on the carriage, leaps out. Runs to her. She's meanwhile bawling her eyes out by herself.
She said she like soaked a handkerchief.
Yes. And so he finally gets to her. Hang on, I just have to get to this. So like they have this like heated kiss, and then he says, Mary love, my heart's gleam, drop of my dearest blood, you should have told me. And then there's a little part later, he says, I'm so damn sorry for the way I've been trying to keep you at a distance. I didn't know you were already inside me. And I was just like, oh, this reunion.
The way that he speaks to her, the way that he conveys how much she means to him is...
It kills me.
Literal poetry.
Literal.
This man is not afraid to voice his feelings, and I can't tell you how amazing that was to read and to hear. He literally has no inhibitions about laying it all out there and wearing his heart on his sleeve for her. And they spend a wonderful afternoon just banging the shit out of each other. Okay? And it's glorious. So she had sent a telegram to her parents saying that she would be on the next train to Stony Cross, okay? But obviously she didn't go to Stony Cross. Also of note, Evie has arrived home, because I love how the letters that Sebastian was sending her, she knew something was wrong, because she was just like, I could just tell the tone. Something's like wrong. Something, you're trying
Meanwhile,
to hide something.
He's pining for his wife. Pining while she's been gone.
One
Wait
of
a second.
My fucking favorite scenes
yes,
was
go
the
find
thing
it.
That he says to her. So Sebastian's taking a little swim.
Yeah.
And he was swimming so hard because he's frustrated that that Kier has left. And I love how he gets out the water and he sees Evie and he's just like, Evie, are you here? And she's like, I thought you were swimming so fast and so hard. I thought that a shark was after you. And he was like, my dear, I am the shark. I mean, Sebastian, I mean, come on, okay? Anyway, so he's like, you've been gone so long. And he says, I've roasted in a hell of sexual deprivation since you've abandoned me. She goes, abandoned? He's like, you vanished in the middle of the night. She goes, it was the morning, without saying a word about where you were going. And she's like, you arranged for the tickets. I didn't even have a chance to say goodbye. And Evie says, you did. You took 2 hours and nearly made me miss my train. And he goes, oh, yeah, I do remember that part.
Y'all,
he's ridiculous. He's ridiculous.
Oh, my
and I
God.
Love him.
I
and this
love
is why
him.
He's still one of my favorite heroes.
Ugh.
Top freaking tier. Honestly, yes. ranking heroes now. Kier now eclipses Sebastian, but only by virtue of being of the fruit of his loins, honestly. I mean, I'm just joking. Kier totally takes the top spot for me.
Yeah.
But Sebastian is right behind him. And I'm not
close.
Upset that Sebastian's offspring has taken the top spot. I'm really not. It's beautiful, and I love it. It's perfect. I couldn't have asked for a better hero.
I love when they're, so the next morning, okay, when this is when Westcliff and all of them arrived and they're still in bed and they don't know that they're there. I love, see, they have some witty banter back and forth as well. And he tells her, 'tis only to be expected after all your wildness. And Mary's like, my wildness? And he says, I was ridden like a stolen horse, he claimed and grinned as she wiggled beneath him. She's like, let me out of this bed. You know, she goes, your version of morning after talk is appalling. And then he goes on to say, how could it be late when you're this sunrise? There's no morning sky or lark song before you appear. No butterfly would dare unfold its wings. The day waits on you, my heart, just as the harvest waits the reaper. She's like, oh, well, maybe his morning after skills are pretty...
They were supposed to have breakfast with Sebastian, and it's like 10 o'clock, and she's like, we're late. Everyone's going to know you were in my room, you know? And what should happen just as she was getting into the mood, because Kira's convincing her that morning sex is the exact thing that they should be doing.
Right.
There's a knock on the door, but it opens right after the knock, and who enters but Merritt's mother.
Merritt, darling. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Merritt's like, oh my God, my mother's here and just saw me with my boy toy. It is awesome because the next scene is actually Sebastian at the breakfast table reading his newspaper, and Marcus walks in, and Sebastian's like, what are you doing here? And I love how he freaks out when he finds out that Lillian is loose in the house.
Oh, he's like, oh my God, unsupervised.
He keeps looking at the ceiling, trying to figure out where she is, and is Kira still in Merritt's bed?
Like, oh God.
It is perfect because, like, Evie walks in, and Sebastian's like, Lillian's here walking around the house unsupervised. And she's like, I'll go find her. But then she walks in and she's like, I am here. There was nothing to see. Like, everything that she's saying, it was hilarious.
I just saw Merritt in her room, alone.
Completely alone. Absolutely nobody else was in the room with her.
It's funny that Westlip doesn't catch on. He's the only one who's not catching on, thank God.
And Sebastian's like, oh, shit. Lillian just walked in on them.
She's pissed. Well, then it all comes out who Kier actually is. He says, Westcliff, he's the one I was telling you about. And then Evie's, and they're like, oh my God. And Lillian's the only one that's sort of like fourth man out. It's like, what are y'all talking about? And then
this is a great moment because Lillian was just like, did you think that I would ridicule with you with the fact that you had an illegitimate son? Like, that's couldn't be further from the truth. I would have been a friend to you. I would have been there to support you. And, like, I've been trying to be your friend for 25 fucking years, Sebastian. and I love how Sebastian is just now getting that, like, because, I mean, Sebastian tried to abduct Lillian.
Yeah.
And I think that it's fair to say, like, he never expected that Lillian would want to be his friend.
Right.
And I love this moment between them, because it is a moment between Sebastian and Lillian. She gets really upset that he won't let her be friends. Yeah. And so he goes and talks to her. And it's a lovely moment. It really is a lovely moment.
It was. He apologizes. And he's still his arrogant self, but he does apologize.
He's like, I'm sorry that I wasn't, you know, a good friend to you when you wanted to extend that friendship. She was like, yeah, I'm like, stop apologizing for you kidnapping me. Like, our kids basically have grown up with each other and we're practically freaking family. Like, it's time to let bygones be bygones. Like, I really do love how, like, they vacation together and, like, the kids, the reason why, like, none of their kids have gotten together is because they thought that it would feel incestuous because they've grown up alongside each other.
She calls him Uncle Sebastian.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I mean, he's not, you know, by blood, but they're just that close. So we finally, and so Kier kind of makes himself scarce because Kingsman's like, hey, you might want to just like skedaddle for a little while I kind of deal with the rest of everybody else. And so he does. He goes out to this like nice little cozy place by the beach, and Lillian shows up, and they just have like the greatest conversation. I love how he also calls her, so she curses is worse than a Scots golfer. Like, she's like got the worst.
And I love how her response is like, oh, Scottish golfers curse that bad? Yeah, like her mom is known for
it's like everybody
cursing.
Knows my mom has the worst mouth. But it's like she can get away with it because she's an American, you know, they can do whatever. And so everything is sort of like settling in. But he's like, you know, and then Ransom shows up. So then Ransom comes, and Ransom's basically gives us some big news that his father has been killed, is dead. Or not his father. Ormond, who is, oh my God, how do we say this?
Ormond is his mother's husband.
Right.
Who, by law, Kier is recognized as his heir.
Heir. But also, that is also true, but also it kind of states that Lady Ormond had money in her own stuff, and her estate was supposed to go to her son if he was still alive.
But if she did not have any legitimate offspring, which Kier would be considered legitimate, even though there was a letter to Sebastian saying, like, hey, this is your son, and it's all proved in the court and all that jazz, the fact that they were married at the time that Kier was conceived and born makes him legitimate. Like, you can't not.
He's within marriage.
Yes. So Ormond does not want there to be offspring because then he won't get all the money.
So that's who's been trying to, he's hired these men to try to kill him.
So now we have our motive for who's been gunning for Kyr this whole time.
Yeah.
It's his, I love how he's so upset about like everything that's going on and like the plan and stuff and like, having to lure him as bait and stuff like that. And he gets like so upset that at one point he's like, I need to go talk to Mary. And Sebastian's like, what are you going to tell her? That I have too many fucking fathers because there's like too many people. That he's like, I thought I only had one. And now I have a fake father. I have a real father. And then I have my father I grew up with. Like, it's so many fathers. There is also a really lovely moment. I mean, I could wax poetic about the things that Kyr tells Merit, but they have a lovely moment where Kyr and Lillian get to talk by themselves on the beach.
Yes.
And they connect. And then also Westcliff comes out and connects with him as well. And then they leave Merit and Kyr and they have sex on the beach. And it is honestly so freaking cute. And it's kind of understood at this point that Merritt's like, okay, well, yeah, we're definitely going to get married.
Yeah.
And Kyr definitely wants her as his wife, but is a little bit, I don't want to say like intimidated, but he knows that his lifestyle is not something that she's going to
They're
going to
have to figure this out.
Yeah.
Like, they still don't know where they're going to live and how they're going to live and how it's going
to
work out.
He wants to make sure she's going to be comfortable and he can give her the life that she wants, you know? And so this moment is just a really beautiful moment where they can just, you know, be with each other and connect with each other. And he tells her, how my arms love the feel of you last. Like, how beautiful is that?
I highlighted that one too. How my arms love the feel of you.
It's freaking great. And Kyr says, when this business with Lord Ormond is settled and all is safe, will you visit Isla with me? You could have a look at the island to help decide if you can make a life there. And she says, do you think I could be happy on Isla? And he said, it's not for me to say what your needs are. It's for you to say and me to listen. Mm-hmm. And she says, first, I need you. Like, this is just their relationship in a nutshell. I love the way that he respects her. And I love the way that their need for each other is equal in measure.
Yeah.
That's all that they want. That's all that they need. And when Ethan Ransom suggests that Kyr be the bait to lure the assassins out so that they can have proof that Lord Ormond is hiring people to assassinate Kyr, I love how Merritt's not happy about the idea, but Sebastian's the one that's like, absolutely not. My son will not be used as bait.
Yeah.
And it's very cute how Kyr is a little bit touched about how concerned Sebastian is for his safety. It's really cute. But Kyr's just like, this is what needs to happen. Merritt says, I can go with him because I can guard his body day and night. Like, I can be with him all the time and it won't look suspicious.
We also found out that Merritt is a markswoman. She is an expert.
She's a demonstration. I love how Marcus is just like, yeah, put the other bunny out of its misery, Merritt. That's exactly how I taught you how to do it, babe.
Westcliff knows his daughter's badass.
His daughter is so badass, and he could not be more proud. She's like, fuck yeah. You saw that?
She's a little bit of a tomboy, you know? And it's just like,
I love how she's like, I also know exactly how to hunt and track. Like, I'm a good tracker.
Yeah.
Like, I could be a survivalist, you know?
Like,
if you put me in the woods.
I could live on the island. I could totally, like, make things work there. Well, then we have before they start to put this plan into play and head to the island in Scotland, we have another moment between Kyr and Kingston, and it all comes back to the key and the lock. This scene, I cried again.
It's beautiful, and I love how Marcus lets him have his moment, because Kyr did go ask Marcus for permission to marry his daughter, and I love how Marcus is just like, you know, a widow doesn't need permission to remarry, and he's like, but I still want your blessing. Like, I want you to be okay with this, and he's like, of course I'm okay. And then he's like, I'll leave you two to talk alone. And the moment that he and Sebastian have together, it's just so good, because it's very understated at first. Nobody's overtly saying, like, I'm so glad that I met you. Mm-hmm. And Sebastian just like, whatever you'll need, like, if you have any trouble, once you do inherit all the estates and stuff, be sure to contact me. Like, you can contact me anytime if you need anything at all. I'm at your disposal. I want you to meet your other siblings. You and Gabriel are going to get along so well. And I'm just like, oh my God, this man just does not want to see his son go. He just got his son back, you know? And Kyr is a little bit hesitant, but he brings out the key. And he just like, you know, do we want to see if it unlocks the pocket watch?
Oh my God.
So the moment where he unlocks the pocket watch, okay, he's so overcome with emotion that this is confirmation that for sure Sebastian is his father. And it just brings about the floodgates. And Kier starts tearing up. And Sebastian embraces him.
He puts his hand on his nape and pulls his head to his shoulder. And it's just, y'all.
His line.
I'm kind thinking about it.
His fucking line. So Sebastian says, "You'll always be Lachlan McRae's son. But you're mine too. You can be mine too." And Kier says, "I know," in a whisper. It's just like, and a sense of peace stole over him. And I'm just like, oh, God. Sebastian just wants to love him so bad. And Kier's finally, like, opening up to the fact that he can have, like, another father figure. And it won't replace his father that he loves so much. But he can still have, like, this very extended family. There's also a really cute moment where Serafina comes to confirm that he does have Scott's blood in him. Because he's very upset when Phoebe kind of offhandedly mentions that they don't have Scottish ancestry.
Yeah. Well, your father is Kingston and your mother is English as well. Yes. So he's like, well, I'm not Scottish.
And I love how Serafina, like, his siblings are working hard to make sure that he feels like he's still Scottish.
Yeah. Oh, and they find out they're related to Robert the Bruce of all Scotsmen.
Through a female line. And that's amazing. I thought it was a cute sibling moment.
It was. There's so many, like, literally there's no throwaway scenes. Like, none.
There's no scene that I would cut out of this book.
None.
Ever.
Not.
Every line is precious. Okay.
So now we're journeying by ship to the island.
Kier has left in the morning because he does not want Merritt to come with him. Because he tells her, like, I can't let you come with me because, you know, she says I can be the extra rib that guards your heart. And he's like, no, you can't because you are my heart.
No, that was another line.
I'm sorry, Kier. How many times can you slay me in one book?
It's not ridiculous.
Fair. It's not fair to anybody, okay? At this point, it's not fair. So Merritt's just like, I mean, dummy, I'm just going to follow you.
Yeah, so she does. So she follows, like, right after him.
On the ship and, the next day.
She does have a little trouble on the ship. She gets a little seasick, a little sick on the ship.
And I love how the Scottish couple that she had met before, they recognize her, and she's like, oh, look here, this always helped me whenever I was in a hopeful way, they say. She's like, oh, no, that's not what happens, but it does help this dried meat, like, basically beef jerky, like, does help settle her stomach.
And she's like, oh, well, you know, I'm it's not that, you know, I'm just seasick and whatever.
Yes. And so. And they do mention that Merritt did struggle with fibroids, so she does have that issue, and so it's harder for her to get pregnant.
Right.
But she thinks, like, the doctors back then are just like, this indicates barrenness. Barren. Like, you are barren. Like, you will never be able to have kids.
Well, they even told her, like, when she, and that was one reason her husband went on this journey, was to kind of get away.
Because he's a little upset about that.
Because he was upset because they were told that she was barren and that she could never have children. And so, yeah, and that was another thing. Kier did not like that he had left her.
I do like how he says, like, I don't want to speak ill of the dead, but, like, yes. I would not have left you in your time of need, stuff like that, which he wouldn't have.
Of course he would not have.
So I love when Merritt approaches the door. Also, the couple follow because they know that Kier has compromised this woman, and they want to bring him to justice. They're like, you will marry this woman, okay?
I have to talk about the wedding, y'all, please.
It is so reminiscent of Evie and Sebastian's wedding. It's crazy.
It's so insane. So first of all, the sheriff is the one who's come to do the wedding. Ethan Ransom is standing up as witness because he's, like, bodyguarding. And then we have the other couple. And then there's this, y'all, I have to read some of this. It's so hilarious. M'lady, has the man used force or false representation to carry you away against your will? Merritt blinked in surprise. What's the matter with you, McTaggart? Kier demanded. Of all the glomless questions, Fia interrupted calmly. This lass has now been abducted, Sheriff. Kier glanced at her over his shoulder. Thank you, Fia. She's been debauched, Fia continued primly, drawn away from the path of virtue by the temptations this lad exerted upon her. Kier was thunderstruck. Debauched? And so then they would go on. It is so funny they go on to argue.
I also love how Kier, the sheriff, is like, hey, there's a fine if you're going to get married without the banns being read. And Kier's like, I'll give you a cask of whiskey. And he's like,
Fine is waived. Immediately.
Like, I'm okay with that. Kira's like, okay, let's get this party started. Very reminiscent of Sebastian's wedding for Evie, because he's like, okay, blacksmith, hurry up with the wedding. And like the blacksmith extends it. Same thing happens for this wedding. And Kira's like, okay, I'll start. I, Kira McCrae. He's like, no, not yet. It's my obligation to ask a few questions. And Kira's like, so McTaggart, so help me if you don't get this wedding on board. Like, oh my God. Oh God. And then all they have to do is say, I take you for my wife. I take you for my husband. And it is sealed the fucking deal. Oh. They're married, baby. And it is glorious.
It is awesome.
And oh no, we can't leave the house because, you know, we're luring the assassin. So we have to stay housebound. The travesty. Oh,
dang it.
Darn. So they spend
locked in this home together
all day and all night in each other's embrace, and it's absolutely beautiful.
It is.
But then we get word. Ethan Ransom's like, we've had a letter that Lord Ormond is dead. He has been killed, and we have to investigate what happened.
Mm.
And so he's like, well, if Ormond is dead, then there's no reason for the assassin to come after Kier. And Merritt's just like, that you know of, like, what if they're still coming? And so Ethan's like, well, I'll leave one man here to guard you. I think his name is Duff or something like that. And so one night, Kier's dog starts going off. And Kier's like, it's been a while and Duff hasn't come check. I think something's wrong.
Something's happened.
I need to go to the distillery. I need to go check and see what's happening. Like, make sure he's not sending flames or anything.
Like, right next door to his home. It's all kind of on the same plot of land. So then they go and investigate, and of course Mary's like, you're not going in there by yourself. I'm coming with you.
They're such a team.
And I love how it's never like, I'm the man, you're the woman, stay here. You know, like, he's like, of course, come with me. So they stay close together, and they kind of, and he knows the distillery, so he kind of knows how to weave in and out. And basically they loose some barrels on top of the bad guy and trap him, and
I really like how it wasn't. It, like, we've already been through so much by this point.
We don't need it to be really long.
He already had an assassination attempt. He already almost got burned alive. He already suffered from amnesia and got his memory back. Like, we don't need another close call.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that it wasn't, like, a close call. Like, it was wrapped up pretty neatly, and I appreciated that. Because if anybody needed peace, it's poor fucking Kier and Merritt. So now they can live happily together. And I do like how Kier's struggling with all the property that he now owns. He's like, I don't feel a connection to that land. And she's like, well, we could use the manor house as a school if you want. He's like, I like that idea. Mm. They're so good together. And like, Merritt's used to managing big businesses as well. So she's a great person to have.
She's the perfect person to go to. She's like, we'll figure out ways. We'll have managers to handle all that. Because he's like, I don't want my life to become like collecting tenants.
He's
and
a whiskey maker.
No, he's like, so I'm a whiskey maker. And he's like, of course not. And this is what you'll do, you know? And so I love that he now has the means to, you know, just to put his father's business, Lachlan's business, you know, on the map and really expand it. And now he's got the
perfect woman to help him. And also build a lovely house for his wife on the island. It's beautiful on Isla. And the epilogue is so beautiful. A little Christmas scene. Everyone's going to Stony Cross.
Yes, the Christmas scene. Okay, y'all, this is so beautiful. So we have like Westcliff's family and Sebastian's family. So Lillian has gotten a letter, and she wants Westcliff to share it with Sebastian. And the letter is, of course, saying that that they're with child, that Mary and Kier are going to have a child. And so I love this sort of reaction. This is the very ending of the book. Westcliff tried to look severe. You realize, Kingston, that my first grandchild has been sired by your illegitimate offspring. Yes, yes. Who cares about legitimacy? This child will be magnificent with my looks and your brains. It could have my looks and your brains, Westcliff pointed out. Don't be such a pessimist. Bring the brandy bottle over here and we'll start making plans. And so then the two friends smile and they clink glasses, and it is just like the perfect ending.
It's the perfect ending.
It's so beautiful.
But I don't want it to be the ending of the Wallflower Children. And I will reiterate, I demand a story for Luke. Demand a story for all of the Marsden
Serafina,
children.
Serafina, Ivo. Can you imagine what Ivo is going to be like?
And also, is it Raphael, the son who's in America?
Yes, we still haven't seen him.
We have a full-blown, huge-ass series in our future. Lisa Kleypas.
Ms. Kleypas, we know you have plans. You just continue writing, and we will read and devour every word.
I would cry if we don't get the children.
Oh my God. You know Ivo's going to be a rascal. You know it.
It's going to be fucking great.
Because he's like the surprise child with the big age gap, you know? Oh my goodness, I can't wait for all of them. Every single one. Okay. Hate to do this to you. Showdown.
It's almost impossible.
It is almost impossible.
I think that my showdown has to be when he returns, though, because I've never felt more relief and just, yes, like, the fact that everything came back and his reaction just being like...
The things he still says has
all the
her?
Same problems, but the fact that he now remembers that they spent a night together and it was so meaningful to him that he's just like, that all can wait. I have to go back for my Mary. Ugh. And he's not upset with her, but he's just like, Mary, why didn't you tell me? And she's just like, I thought it would be easier. And he was like, absolutely not. And she's like, I need you.
We didn't even talk about that. She said, I thought maybe some part of you wanted to forget. And he's like, never, you know, could I forget you.
Ugh. It gave me all the feels. But honestly, there's too many.
That one was lovely. I would definitely pick that one. I'm going to say the wedding scene because it gave me all the comedic feelings of the Scottish humor, you know, plus we have the tenderness. It actually made me feel a little bit, which is not Scottish, it's Irish, Quiet Man. I always talk about that movie. It's got that same kind of humor where it's just like very cut and dry and whatever. And it's like, oh, it's so good. It was just so good.
It is absolutely phenomenal. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't have asked for better, honestly.
Yeah. Basically, you can turn the page and that would be a showdown, like every single page. Like, it's just amazing. Well, we hope that you enjoyed today's episode and look forward to the next one where we'll be reviewing Golden Dynasty by Kristen Ashley.
Thanks so much for listening.
This goes out to all the fangirls.
Life's better with a little HEA.